It's men who have low self-esteem. And that is because they see Trump as an alpha male and they are jealous. They are intimidated and jealous of him. He's got everything, money, a beautiful wife, success. Now he's the president and he was the president. Now he's the president again. And so they are jealous of that and they compare him to themselves and, you know, that makes them feel bad about themselves. So they want to sort of destroy him. It also is women, super feminist women, who, first of all, it started with the pussy hats. Say these women obviously have deeper issues and have had dysfunctional relationships with men in the past. But, you know, as far as like not having sex or breaking up with their man, if he's a Republican, all that kind of stuff, there are women doing that. And they feel like they have to represent, they're doing it for womankind. They're doing it to represent women, you know, the rights of women. Well, you know, there are some people, it's not a cult because like Trump isn't demanding that people do anything other than vote for him during the campaign. That the reason why some people are a little over the top with MAGA is because of how horrible the last 4 years have been and how frightening it was to think that this election could have been stolen too. So it is a little over the top because it's like, oh my God, could you imagine where America would be if Kamala won?
Is Trump derangement syndrome a legitimate mental health disorder? Dr. Carol Lieberman thinks so. She's even trying to get it accepted into the DSM. She's internationally renowned as the terrorist therapist, a board-certified psychiatrist, three-time Emmy-honored TV personality, radio talk show host, best-selling author, and professional speaker. Stay tuned and learn about the symptoms of Trump derangement syndrome, why people have it, and why Trump triggers people like no other individual in American history.
Hey, well, the first thing I want you to address so people kind of have a basic understanding is, what is Trump derangement syndrome? How would you define it? What are some of the symptoms? I think most people think it's just blue hair and a septum piercing, and that's a pretty good warning sign.
Well, my definition is an irrational, quasi-psychotic hatred of anything Trump, resulting in rage and over-the-top efforts to destroy him and his work. And I actually am just finishing up, polishing up, I guess I should say, my detailed presentation. You know, let me back up. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual is the put out by the American Psychiatric Association every, you know, it varies 5 years or so. And that is a book of all the definitions of different diagnoses. And it is used for psychiatrists and other mental health professionals to have a common language. But it's also used for insurance companies. Each diagnosis has a code, and the insurance companies use it to decide how much treatment people should get, which is like absurd, because of course it should be up to their psychiatrist, their therapist, you know, not the somebody sitting in an office in an insurance company. But anyhow, that's what they do. So looking forward to hoping that people with Trump derangement syndrome eventually realize that they should get treatment, then this would help them get it paid for by insurance companies. In addition to, of course, practitioners, therapists of all different kinds, being able to diagnose it, like not just saying, oh, well, this is when you hate Trump, you know. There are specific characteristics for the minor case, the moderate case, and the major case. And I give examples of each.
Do you think that someone that has Trump derangement syndrome is going to even know it and then walk themselves into a psychologist's office?
Well, you know, they, not all of them know it. In fact, that's one of the diagnoses, or that's one of the associated features, that they don't know that they have it. However, I am hoping to be able to to get this well enough known that they will recognize it. Now, even when they recognize it, like, there are people with TDS who do know they have TDS and are proud of it. I mean, I would expect there to be t-shirts, you know, like with Bart Simpson. What's that? I'm a loser and proud of it, something like that. I don't know why, maybe I just haven't seen it, but someone's going to come up with that idea. I have TDS and I'm proud of it. So, you know, they don't necessarily think that they need help. However, there are divorces due to TDS, and there are family problems due to one member having TDS, you know, one of the parents typically. And so even if they don't think that, even if they're proud of it for themselves, they might want to consider getting therapy if they'd like to keep their marriage together or their family together or something like that.
Okay. What has been the response from other psychiatrists with you having this idea it should be a mental illness? Do a lot of them agree with you and they just want to keep it on the down low?
I have not told any other psychiatrists, but it will, of course, when I submit it to the APA, it will probably make a big bang. But, you know, it's interesting. I looked up the APA, American Psychiatric Association website a few days ago, you know, to see about how to submit it. And I hadn't looked at the website for years, and it has changed. It is so woke. It is unbelievable. They have DEI, they have committees for this and committees for that, all woke stuff. Now, I was once very active in the American Psychiatric Association. I even started, when I was a psychiatric resident at Bellevue, I started a group, a meeting for residents. I started like a junior APA, you know, for psychiatric residents in New York, and it spread to other places. And I was on the Public Affairs Committee for the National APA, and what else? I don't know. I actually have been in the past involved on a committee for a diagnosis in the APA. Like, I know how it works how it worked. when this was back in the day, this was for a DSM-3. They're now up to DSM-5 TR. I had written an article that was published in a journal, a peer-reviewed journal, about schizophrenia and schizoaffective schizophrenia. So I was on the committee for schizophrenia and whether to make schizoaffective schizophrenia a separate category and so on. So you know, how it worked is that there were various committees for main categories, and anytime, whenever there would be new research or new developments, you know, they would, or somebody made a complaint or a suggestion or put in for a proposal or something or other, they would have committees, and there would be a joint decision made as to how it should be in the directory, what the symptoms should be, and, you know, just various things about each diagnosis. A committee for a different diagnosis for each diagnosis. I don't think they did every diagnosis. They didn't change every diagnosis for every new addition. But in any case, no, I am sure from what I know and from what I saw on the website, psychiatrists have gone woke, and they would be horrified. But, you know, that's too bad. I mean, that doesn't mean, you know, that's not going to deter me from trying to, first of all, you know, nobody before me that I know of, I think we would have heard by now, nobody has set out these criteria. You know, they toss around the words, Trump derangement syndrome. Even I, you know, back when he was running for his first term, you know, I did interviews about Trump derangement syndrome, but there weren't any characteristics or qualifications, diagnostic criteria. You know, it was just people who hate Trump. People did this against Trump and that against Trump and all that. But, you know, it's gotten worse. And now in his second term, or even when he was just running, it's really gotten worse. It's gotten more violent. It's gotten more, you know, they're provoking all kinds of protests, not just I mean, more violent kinds of protests. And so, and of course, the Teslas and everything. So, and it's not stopping. I had thought that when he got elected, that and people would see what good things he was doing for the country, that they would calm down. But it hasn't calmed down. And if anything, it's ramped up.
What do you think it is about Trump himself that triggers people to go so crazy? Because I remember as a little kid, people really didn't like George Bush either during the whole Iraq war. It was controversial, but I wouldn't say people lost their collective minds as much over Bush. People didn't like Mitt Romney when he ran for office, but it didn't trigger this insane visceral reaction. What is it about him?
Well, Trump is a bit of a bull in a china shop. And, you know, you can either love that part of him or hate it. You know, he's very transparent. I mean, look at the meeting with Zelensky, for example. He was willing to have all of that be shown with all those media cameras and so on. You know, he's not like embarrassed or ashamed of anything that he's doing. And he wants people to know what's going on in the government. So so there's that, the bull in the china shop aspect. But there's also, and I talk about this in my DSM diagnosis, I'll call it my DSM diagnosis. It's not in there yet, but what I've written is for men, the people, because there's a part in the DSM where you have to talk about who is the most vulnerable, who's the most likely to have a particular diagnosis. So for Trump, it's men who have low self-esteem. And that is because they see Trump as an alpha male and they are jealous. They are intimidated and jealous of him. He's got everything, money, a beautiful wife, success. Now he's the president and he was the president. Now he's the president again. And so they are jealous of that and they compare him to themselves and, you know, that makes them feel bad about themselves. So they want to sort of destroy him. It also is women, super feminist women, first of all, it started with the pussy hats. And then now it has come to women who copied the first of all, Lizzie Strata, the Greek play, you know, the women wouldn't have sex with the men as a way to protest war. And then also there was after that, more recently, there's something in, I think it was, what was it? China? Oh, wait a second. Let me look. China or it was either China or it was in Asia. Let me they did a thing and it was for four no's. They said no to dating men, having sex with men, having babies, and one more no. So that's what women are doing now. They, you know, they're shaving their head. There's also a thing, there was something on TikTok where they were recommending that women poison their men. I mean, it has gotten crazy, you know, crazy. And so some women actually are doing that. It's certainly very popular on TikTok. And and there are women certainly who have, you know, I don't know that I think we would have heard if there was a woman, if they recognized it, if there was a woman who poisoned her man. I think that would have, you know, that would have made news if they recognized it as such, you know, if they realized that it was from poisoning. But, you know, as far as like not having sex or breaking up with their man, if he's a Republican, all that kind of stuff. There are women doing that. And they feel like they have to represent, they're doing it for womankind. They're doing it to represent women, you know, the rights of women. So those are the two groups that are most likely to have TDS.
Does it vary, or is there a more dominant group in terms of age? Like, do baby boomers more extreme with TDS, or is it younger generation, or is there not much of a difference between the ages? Is it more gender-based?
It's more gender-based. I haven't really found much of a difference with age. I mean, you know, some polls have found, not in regard to TDS, but just in general, in terms of voting, that older people tend to be more Republican. But as far as TDS, I haven't really seen a significant difference.
Okay. And then just as you described the men and the women, these kind of self-destructive behaviors, shaving their head, the 4B movement, being jealous and envious of Trump, it seems like they would have deeper psychological issues, maybe mommy and daddy issues. Is this something that's common that you see with people that develop TDS?
Well, yes, yes. I describe that. I say these women obviously have deeper issues and have had dysfunctional relationships with men in the past. So yes, yes. And the men who have low self-esteem, you know, that comes from childhood too.
Everything comes back to the mother, doesn't it? It's always the mother's fault.
Or the father. Like for women, it has to do with, you know, I wrote a book called Bad Boys, Why We Love Them, How to Live with Them, and When to Leave Them. And it has to do with the woman's little girl's relationship with her father as she's growing up. Depending how dysfunctional, in what way it's dysfunctional, she will be attracted to, and I talk about 12 different types of bad boys. So she'll be attracted to different types depending upon what her relationship was like with her father.
Okay. You know, I had a question I wanted to ask you about that book about bad boys. And this is just kind of my own opinion. And you tell me whether this is completely far out. But back in like 2015, when Trump first ran, I thought that Trump had a little bit of this bad boy, devil may care attitude. Yes. And that women on the right, they just love Trump. I mean, he's got his past with women. He's a little bit of a womanizer. That's fine. We don't have to be all sensitive about it. But do you think that maybe that bad boy energy is part of what endears him so much to women who do like him?
That's a good point. Yes, I do think that that's part of it. Or, you know, at least they certainly aren't put off by it, you know, like the other, like the women, the pussyheads are.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I always felt like he just had this like, oh, he's an outlaw. He's a bad boy. Exactly. He's just going to do whatever he wants to make it happen.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and then I wanted to also ask you about, you've talked about the spectrum, you referenced that, of TDS, like maybe it could be mild or extreme. What would that look like? And like practical examples so people can kind of know what to expect.
Well, in the mild cases, it would be people who reel at the mention of Trump's name, having to, if there are people with them, they criticize, they feel like they have to criticize out loud and use expletives and so on. If he's on the television, they throw something on the television, at the television, you know, these kinds of things. But this is relatively mild, I mean, compared to what you'll hear. Then stammering when asked what's not to like about Trump, and having an inability to come up with anything that makes reasonable sense. Inability to state what policy is objectionable or why, deflecting instead with statements like, oh, you know, he's just awful. And they might also do TikTok rants. So examples of this are, well, the ladies of The View. They certainly, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, Joy Behar, they, you know, are sort of the leaders, and they have turned their show, once relevant, thoughtful show, into a hate fest to incite viewers. Then moderate, people with moderate cases, in addition to the mild symptoms, they also have, their life has been overtaken by TDS, and it interferes with their work, their family, other relationships, and other responsibilities. They're unable to distinguish what they don't like about Trump's policies from what they don't like about him personally, but at a deep level. Being unable to calm themselves to prevent lashing out verbally and or physically against supporters of the president. Engaging in protests, in actions to protest Trump, such as joining marches, writing op-eds, and giving speeches or interviews against him. Threatening, following, or assaulting people who wear MAGA hats, other MAGA clothing, or carry MAGA collectibles. committing road rage upon seeing a Trump bumper sticker on a vehicle. Now, and so examples are a woman who, you probably heard about this. There was a woman riding the subway in New York, and she saw a young man wearing a MAGA hat, and she called him racist. And she tried to get other people on the subway to kind of attack him as well. And then when the subway doors opened at a stop and he got out, she ran after him. And she was trying to get his hat. And then she face planted on the platform because she tripped. Then I have some other examples too. But then, also moderate, the presidents of the Ivy League colleges who have TDS, and to the extent that they are willing to appear anti-Semitic in order to fight back against Trump. And otherwise, before this, that wouldn't have been tenable for them. They wouldn't have wanted to appear that way. Then a major case, so in addition to the mild and the moderate symptoms, major cases are where you quit your job or leave your family to work full time to try to stop Trump. Leaving the U.S. in protest of Trump and establishing residence in another country, doing something illegal to try to stop Trump, such as bribe a judge to stop one of his executive orders. Threatening a major figure in Trump's administration up close and personal, like they did with J.D. Vance, attacking someone's personal Tesla, a Tesla showroom, Tesla manufacturing facility with vandalism and so on, doxing Trump supporters and swatting Trump supporters, you know, calling the police and telling them something violent is happening at their home. I mean, I describe it in a little more detail. I'm kind of giving the highlights. And then last but not least, fantasizing about harming Trump oneself, joining a nefarious group plotting harm to Trump, or arranging for someone else to harm Trump, even though you know that your punishment would be severe. And so there are a lot of, this one has the most examples, most examples that are known, you know. So Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen DeGeneres, Rosie O'Donnell moved to Ireland, Ellen DeGeneres moved to England, Bishop Marianne Edgar Boudet, she used her opportunity at the National Prayer Service after the inauguration to spread hate against Trump rather than the love of God. New York Attorney General Letitia James, she campaigned on a platform of targeting Trump, and she, you know, filled those promises when she got in. And J.D. Vance have been repeatedly threatened, like at the Kennedy Center at a concert or in the street when he was carrying his toddler daughter. Then, let's see, a wave of swatting, and I give some examples of that, a wave of attacks on Teslas. And you know, there are more every day. And then there are associated psychiatric symptoms, like not recognizing that you have this disorder, anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive behavior, hysteria, paranoia, sociopathy, psychopathy, suicidal thoughts, delusions, loss of touch with reality, mass psychosis, anger, irritability, or rage as seen in as prominent features in these three psychiatric diagnoses, intermittent explosive disorder, disruptive mood dysregulation disorder, oppositional defiant disorder. And then for treatment, I talk about for mild cases, you can try logical reasoning by pointing out things that they that Trump has done or executive orders that will benefit them personally, like particular ones that would be particularly beneficial to them. But you know, this would only be for a very mild case, because you know, most people are not logical, so it's hard to use logical reasoning. Then individual psychotherapy for all cases of TDS, not focused directly on Trump's policies, but focusing on the problems that the people have that make them vulnerable to TDS. So like for the men, helping them develop more self-esteem, for example, or the women to help them cope with problems that they have with men. And then couples and family therapy, you know, when those things are, when their TDS is causing a problem for their relationship or their family. And then for the moderate and major cases, under the care of a psychiatrist, medication, along with therapy, of course.
When it comes to these people, if we come across someone with TDS in our real life, what's a percentage that they're likely to be violent or, you know, act outwardly towards us so we can kind of have a warning of what might happen? Like if I just see someone who's doing on the mild spectrum, how afraid of them should I be? Or should I walk on the other side of the street, park my car somewhere else?
That's a good question. It's very hard to know. I mean, there are certain, you know, if they're carrying a weapon or if they're very, if they seem very agitated, you know, like you could see protests and against Trump. And there are some people who are just calmly standing there holding a sign. There are other people who are screaming things and are very agitated. You know, those would be the ones who you would be more likely to be concerned about. Not to say that there can't be a secret TDS person who is violent, but mostly the people who, you know, would be violent are also very agitated. And, you know, some people keep their TDS to themselves. You know, I mean, even with the minor part, like even, you know, the ones who yell at the television set or throw things at the television set, they might do that when there's nobody there, you know? So there are varieties. There are distinctions. And it is hard. The problem is that somebody with a mild TDS one day, 2 weeks from now, might have, you know, might be more agitated, more violent. Because, you know, I think they are being fueled to be violent. You know, when the election happened, there was this rumor going around, this possibility, you may know about it, that there was this expectation that if Trump won, the Democrats were going to start wars in the street, you know, violence in the street. And so that was kind of a surprise when it didn't really happen, not to any major, you know, extent. But that doesn't mean that that feeling isn't still there, isn't lurking, you know, in them. And so it could, that's why the people are being, I mean, even if you look at Kamala Harris's concession speech, it was, she said the word fight 21 times, I counted. And it was really a speech, it was hardly a concession speech, you know? It was really a speech talking to people who voted for her and saying, you know, we're not done yet. You know, like we have to keep fighting for what we want and not give in, kind of thing. So I saw it as a dog whistle. I saw it as a very concerning speech where she was trying to tell the people who voted for her, we'll, you know, we're not done yet.
What, like, we got the left, half the country, what percentage of them, off kind of what you, I know you don't have all of this figured out just yet, you're in the beginning stages, but what percentage of the left would you say you think have a form of TDS? Do you think it's most of the left? Do you think it's half of them?
I think it's most of the left.
Most of them. Okay. What's going to happen in the next 4 years? Trump leaves office unless he secures a third term somehow. Yes. If he changes that, when he leaves office, do you think TDS will just kind of fade away because now he's not on TV all the time in people's faces, or are they going to channel it into something else?
Well, you know, when I talk about this, when TDS did some after he lost, or so supposedly lost, you know, to Biden, The TDS we didn't see it really, and it did kind of quiet down, but it became latent in people. You know, it didn't mean that it disappeared all the way. And so when he ran again, it was, you know, in those people, it was right there. And they were, you know, they were able to, they jumped right in with it.
And I'm curious, are there other psychological disorders that trigger people based off of one person? Like Trump triggers these people into TDS. Is there other psychological disorders in the past that have centered around one personality or character? Or is this kind of a new phenomenon?
Well, I mean, the only thing, you know, a lot of these things start early on, like in childhood, or at least the roots are there in childhood. So that's why it's harder. I mean, but people with certain personalities, like, for example, I talked about sociopathy or psychopathy, that they would are more easily triggered, you know, by TDS. But you know, there are things that do get triggered after childhood. Like, for example, I coined the term compulsive shopping. And the way I got to that was I was treating a lot of people with eating disorders. And I saw that when I was curing their eating disorders, like they would, you know, they would, like at lunch hour, they would, of course, go and have these giant meals, for example. Or some of them, you know, who had anorexia wouldn't eat at all, you know, but lunch hour was a triggering time, of course. And so what I saw was that as they got better from their eating disorder, they developed a shopping disorder. They spent their lunch shopping. And so I put together a diagnostic profile for them. That was the first time I was on Oprah to talk about that. And I connected it to, it was childhood. It was people who were more like an addiction. So people who were dependent or people who were, had a void in them, you know, the same kind of people who get addicted to alcohol or drugs or an eating disorder. You know, it had to do with during their oral phase, you know, when they were their first and second year, or first year in particular, that if some trauma happened in their life, that they weren't getting enough love in particular, that would cause this emptiness. But also it's like people who, you know, had problems in their Oedipal stage, because that's the time when their little girls are trying to get their daddy's attention away from their mommy. And little boys, the opposite. And but little girls, you know, so they, if they're fixated at that stage, they're always concerned about their appearance. So whether it's an eating disorder to make themselves look more attractive, or a shopping disorder to make themselves look more attractive, you know, it's kind of the same thing. They want attention.
And do you think if Trump, let's say, existed 50 years ago, before social media, before everybody had internet on their phones in their pockets, would it be such an outrage? Would TDS exist? I think sometimes maybe because Trump is such a controversial figure and we see him all the time, that maybe social media and the internet has made this a worse psychological problem for people. Or do you think this would have happened regardless of whether we had the internet or not?
Well, there might have been some regardless, but yes, I think the internet has worsened it. I mean, people post all kinds of things, and and I forgot to mention, you know, I was kind of giving you the highlights of these different of what I was talking about for the diagnosis, but I did mention about, I mean, we did have, for the severe case, you know, we did have the two assassination attempts that we know of. So I don't know. I don't know what made me think of that, but all of a sudden, wait a second, did I mention that? Yes. And it's so interesting. Do you know that, I'm sure you probably know, that they still haven't gotten or haven't revealed the information that they found out about the first would-be assassin. You know, and there's all kinds of cover up of his house and all that. They took away his phone and his computer and all this kind of stuff. They're whitewashing it. And I mean, it's absurd that this is happening.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be curious kind of what was going on in his mind. It probably lines right up with the research you've done with TDS. I mean, I can't imagine it not.
Well, right. But it seems like maybe he had some assistants.
Probably too. Well, I know they cremated his body soon afterwards. Right away, like, what?
Yes.
Right. Like, are you kidding me? It's like the most important crime we've seen in a long time, and you get rid of the body.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to ask you a few questions, being devil's advocate, TDS. Okay, so some of the symptoms that you described, like protesting, maybe becoming an activist, ranting on social media or TikTok, some people might say, well, that's just normal free expression, political outrage. We're a country where we love to argue about politics. I mean, since our founding, what would you say to someone that says, well, maybe this is just a cheap trick to kind of discount anybody on the left? Because somebody may just be really an activist. They really deeply believe in their progressive values. And it's just like, I believe this, and it's not because of Trump. How would you answer that?
Well, I think it's the degree. You know, yes, I agree that we should have First Amendment rights. But when someone, it's not just about First Amendment rights, though. It's about, like, when someone is that upset, you know, about something, you know, it's the degree. I mean, yes, I was not happy about Biden. And when he was running, I did a lot of interviews and spoke out a lot about, I was trying to warn people how he had dementia. He had what I called encroaching dementia. So, but I wasn't like, it didn't like take my whole, I mean, you know, I guess to a point it did. But so I had Biden derangement syndrome. But what my derangement was, not just about him as a candidate, it was about, hey, folks, you know, we're going to elect a president with dementia. But anyway, it's like the extent to which TDS takes over their life, you know, and to the extent to which they try to provoke other people. I mean, it's like with these. With these protests at colleges, you know, where people like these presidents are trying to say, oh, well, free speech, blah, blah, blah. You know, that they have the right to do this. Well, they don't have the right to provoke violence against Jewish students and to provoke anti-Semitism and to stop Jewish students from going into the library or going to class or whatever and being physical. You know, they got physical, then they trespassed into college buildings. There was vandalism. Those things are crimes.
I'm glad you brought up Biden, because that was kind of my next devil's advocate question. A lot of people on the right kind of, I thought they went a little over the edge with the Biden hate. There was, you know, the Let's Go Brandon chants. People started, this kind of blends in with the woke stuff. A lot of people on the right, oh, it's woke. It's woke. It's woke. Let's cancel Bud Light. Let's cancel Disney. To this extreme, it just intertwines their life so much, I can't tell them apart from their political opinion. And then you have what happened on January 6th, which I think was a total scam. I think those people were over-prosecuted. But they took their protesting to a new level, to the point that they definitely interfered with their life. How would you, do you think that maybe this Trump derangement syndrome has a mirror image effect on those on the right and they have their own derangement to a certain point? Or do you still think that's different, if I'm making any sense?
Yeah, you're making sense. I think it's different. You know, I actually wrote, I'm a forensic psychiatrist in addition to being a clinical psychiatrist. And so I was asked, and I did, write part of the appeal that went out for J6 prisoners that had to do with why it should be moved to a different venue, how they can't get a fair trial in Washington, D.C. And so there was research on, you know, because the media in Washington, D.C. is so anti the J6 people. And so I talked about, you know, I talked about juries because, like, I'm a jury consultant, and I talked about how, even though, you know, they're asked to put their prejudices aside, can you decide on this case? Can you put your prejudices aside and decide on this case with an open mind, kind of thing? And so people say yes, of course. Well, people say yes if they want to be on the jury, and they say no if they don't want to be on the jury. But clearly there were people, just like on Trump's jury, you know, there were people who said, yeah, oh yeah, we can do this with an open mind. Clearly they didn't. But anyhow, so and even people who honestly believe that they can put aside what they've seen on television and read and all that, it's very hard to, unconsciously, there are prejudices, and that you might try to fight them, you know, and think that you have conquered them, but really there are these prejudices that are unconscious. And so I wrote a whole thing about that for the J6 prisoners.
So, like, you brought up the Teslas, people lighting them on fire and destroying the Tesla dealerships and that type of stuff, which is insane to me that anybody would do that. I could just see someone on the left pointing the finger at January 6th people and saying, okay, we light some Teslas on fire, but you all went into the Capitol to try to overthrow an election. Do you see a distinction between those that maybe I'm not picking out, where I think maybe both sides there have a little bit of an issue of just taking their politics too far?
Yes. I mean, some of them went too far in terms of, but it was basically trespassing. Like, they didn't, you know, the only person who got killed was the Ashley Babbitt, and that was from a policeman. You know, so some of them, you know, like the guy who was sitting into Nancy Pelosi's office and stuff, he, you know, but they didn't really, some of them went a little too far. But the thing is, I watched Trump's speech that morning, and he never told them to go into the Capitol. And he certainly didn't tell them to attack anybody or to take anything, or he just wanted them to go to the Capitol and show, it's a show of strength, that they're not okay with what happened. I mean, you know, I'm not okay with what happened. What's his name? The vice president whose name I have repressed. You know, he only didn't call. I mean, there would have been nothing wrong with calling for a recount, you know, to count the ballots again, to make sure they were all accurate. That's all that, you know, was asked for. But Pence wouldn't do it because Pence was hoping, didn't want Trump to get another term. He wanted to be president himself. He wanted to be able to run for president, which he did. So it showed everybody that was what his motive was in not asking for any recounts. So, you know, he was just totally selfish, and it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, then there's these stories, actually, like the committee to examine J6, you know, they didn't really find anything that was bad. They found a lot of things. I mean, they found some things that they said were bad, but they found a lot of things that disproved what they were trying to say. So you know, it was not, they made a big deal out of the... A tempest in a teapot.
Kind of one final devil's advocate question here, a little bit different off course of TDS, but I hear a lot of commentators online and they love to just say MAGA's a cult. They just kind of discount everybody. But you're a psychiatrist, you've got expertise in this, you would know cult members when you see them. How do you break that down? How would you look at some commentator on the left and say, whoa, MAGA's not a cult, and here's three reasons why?
Well, you know, there are some people, it's not a cult, because like, Trump isn't demanding that people do anything other than vote for him during the campaign. But I mean, even then, he wasn't, you know, he was asking people to vote for him and he was telling everybody why. But there are some people who are, you know, like the left says, it's TDS is Trump devotion syndrome, that there are people, you know, who are so out of their head devoted to him, you know? But that's, you know, and yes, there are some people who, you know, but the thing is that, that the reason why some people are a little over the top, with MAGA is because of how horrible the last 4 years have been and how frightening it was to think that this election, could have been stolen too. So it is a little over the top because it's like, oh my God, could you imagine where America would be if Kamala won? You know, it's just, it's a very scary thought. So that's what makes people, you know, be a little more. I was at the inauguration. That was an amazing, amazing time. It was just, it was so exciting. It was so patriotic. It was so, it was just wonderful. It was like, it gave you hope again that America was going to be number one and was going to get back to how it was.
Because I find Jeffrey Epstein fascinating. And when I read in your bio that you've done a psychological profile, what is your psychological profile of him? And then on the flip side, what's the psychological profile of someone that would get involved in his world and be that debase? These people are so powerful and rich, you think they wouldn't be so dumb to get caught in his blackmail ring.
Well, I mean, sex is powerful. And so, you know, I mean, they just gave in to their base instincts. And, you know, I think maybe he lied to some of the people about how old the girls were and all that. And in some places, like in England, it's not 16, it's 17. I think I maybe have that reverse, that it was okay at 16. Anyway, it's a year younger, a year younger is okay than what it is in America. Maybe 17 and 18. I don't know. I paid attention to that when things were going on with Prince Andrew, but you know what made Jeffrey Epstein? Well, it was a combination. It was like a perfect storm. Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. I don't know that Jeffrey Epstein would have been Jeffrey Epstein without Ghislaine Maxwell. Do you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't have been able to have as many girls and make this into such a major club, a major cult. Well, it wasn't exactly a cult. They didn't love him, but you know, and Ghislaine was attracted to him. She wanted him to be her boyfriend, her husband, whatever. And so that he kept her hooked by that, you know, it was so close. It was like being his girlfriend. I mean, she was his girlfriend for a while and then it kind of petered out, but she was still super attracted to him. And she was getting him these girls to make him happy, to make him love her. And she, of course, was sexually abused by her father. So that's why she, you know, was able to do this. She was kind of acting out her own story. And these girls, you know, it's very interesting this weekend, this past weekend, when Virginia Jeffrey killed herself, or so-called killed herself. I know a lot of people are saying that they don't think she committed suicide, that they think she was killed. Now, she might have been, but I mean, I certainly think that Jeffrey Epstein was killed, you know, that wasn't suicide, that people killed him because he knew too much. And he was going to out them, all these famous people. But I think with Virginia, you know, a few days or a week before she committed suicide, she had that, there was this an accident where she was in the car, a woman was driving her, and there was a school bus that kind of clipped her car, but it was not a big deal. And the woman didn't get hurt, and there was no ambulance called, no police called, and the bus driver reported it to the police, you know, because he certainly didn't want to get into trouble. So he reported what had happened, but It was just like a barely touched the car, her car. Anyway, then she suddenly appeared with these bruises on her face, and she put herself all over social media. And she said, oh, the doctors have told me I only have 4 days to live, and that's okay, but I want to see my daughter, my children. Not, she has a son too, but I want to see my children before I die. And she's going through this divorce and custody battle, which can be very exhausting and upsetting, especially when her husband apparently is trying to get full custody. It seems like this was a ploy to get the husband to bring their children to her in the hospital. I don't know if he did or not, but, you know, by her putting that all over social media, I just want to see my kids, you know, certainly that was putting pressure on him to do it. Anyway, and now a week later or so, she is dead. Now, what I think, actually, I tweeted at the time that she, you know, made this dramatic thing on social media. I tweeted that I hope anybody who was questioning whether her abuse claims are true now realize that they're not, or something. I worded it better on Twitter. But like the point is, she was being so dramatic about this thing that I'm going to die in 4 days. And clearly, it just didn't seem that was true with how the accident was and how she looked and all of that. And she didn't die in 4 days. To me, it showed that she was lying. I never believed her 100% in the claims that she was making against Prince Andrew in particular. I felt that she was a woman scorned, that she was just angry that he didn't want to continue a relationship with her so that she could become, what would she be, like a princess, I guess. Prince Andrew, she's a princess. So when people could see, I hoped, I thought that this was so phony, that she was making such a big dramatic thing over this alleged car accident, that they would think to themselves, huh, I wonder if maybe some of the things she said about these men aren't true. Well, and so I thought the reason why I think that it probably was suicide was, first of all, having this, you know, upset about her not having the children, fighting about for her children and losing her children, and to some degree, or not, maybe not getting them full time or something, worried about that in any case. And then being worried about people now doubting all of her claims about these men, that if she could do such a drama act for this car accident, that maybe it's a drama act for the men. So she didn't want people digging into it and finding out that some of this was phony, and so she killed herself. That's my take. I mean, of course it's horrible. I don't want to say, of course it's horrible that these girls were abused. But you know what gets me? I really was not happy with the Ghislaine trial. I thought she got, I didn't think it was fair that she got, that she got found guilty and was given such a long punishment and all that, because it came out that one of the men on the jury had lied. You know, he had forgotten to put down he put it down, but the judge didn't see it, or some kind of story about that he was sexually abused. So clearly that would give him a tainted view of the whole thing. So that, you know, I mean, the thing is that there are a lot of girls, all different ages, who get sexually abused, often by their fathers or an uncle or a stranger or whatever. And that's horrendous and affects them for their whole life. But I don't have as much sympathy for these girls. Nobody, they weren't imprisoned in Epstein's house or on his island. You know, they could have left. They kept coming back because they wanted the money. And, you know, for some wanted the attention, but primarily it was the money. And so I know I'm probably the only or the only woman or one of few women who say this, who have said this, but you know, it would be one thing if he kept them in his basement or something, you know? But they were free to go.
I guess that's just the power of psychologically controlling people. I guess he just had such a hook in their brains that he didn't even need shackles or a basement. He could just.
Yes. And these girls were mostly been all abused already. Like Virginia had already been sexually abused. And I think a lot of these girls, if not all of them, already had been abused. So, so that made them more vulnerable to him.
Okay. Interesting stuff. I'd love to get the full scoop, but I don't think the government will ever give us all the information on Epstein. I'm still waiting for it. Hopefully Trump gets that out for us soon. That's the main thing I want out of him.
Yes.
Where can people listening follow you online, keep up with what you're doing? Just kind of tell the audience where they can keep track of you.
Well, I rant on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is Dr. Carol MD. So Dr. Carol is Carole and then MD. I have a number of websites. One of my websites is expertwitnessforensicpsychiatrist.com. And my favorite is terroristtherapist.com. Because since 9/11, I've been the terrorist therapist, helping people cope with terrorism, trying to wake people up to the fact that terrorists are trying to take over America. They've already taken over Europe, and it's just very, very upsetting that people are so blind. But anyhow, but on my on terroristtherapist.com is a lot of stuff. But in particular, there are music videos that I created for the 1 year anniversaries for 9/11. I did. I've been doing this for 4 years, and this past year, I sort of updated the 9/11 video. It's not just warm and fuzzy why we need to remember 9/11. It's warning people about terrorism. And also I created a music video for October 7th. And that's on there as well. I did. And I put these videos on the days, on the anniversaries. I go around, during COVID, I just had the trucks go around themselves. But then this past year, I went around in New York. The trucks went around New York and Washington, D.C. for 9/11. And this year I was in the truck in New York. And then for 10/7, I was in the truck in Los Angeles. But the trucks, they're mobile billboards. They play the video on the side of the truck. But these videos are on the website, and so people can see them.
Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.